Esther Min, for those of you whom I haven't met. And this week, we're doing a study of some of the wisdom literature in the Bible. The title of the series is wrong in my bio. It should be Wisdom Literature, the Voice of Human Experience in the Bible. And I thought it would be interesting to look at three of the books in the corpus of the writings, Proverbs, Job, and Ecclesiastes. We usually think of the Bible as the Word of God coming down to us, and certainly we do have a strong tradition of revelation and surprising good news from above in the Bible. But when you look at the book of Proverbs, for example, you have the voice of human experience coming through, traditional wisdom. And so we know that in our lives, in our efforts to lead good lives, our own experiences are very important. So I thought it would be good to look at this body of literature. One thing that we have these last 100 years that people before us didn't have is we have discoveries from the ancient Near East. We have documents that tell us about the life and times way back when. And an interesting thing that's been discovered in the 19th century were documents that contained wisdom literature from Mesopotamia and also from Egypt. Now, this is fascinating because now we have a larger context within which we can read the book of Proverbs. And whereas the book of Proverbs is distinctly Israelite because it talks about the beginning of wisdom being the fear of the Lord, the Lord, the God of Israel, and also there are other features which are distinctive, still we can see that the Israelites participated in a larger cultural milieu, and it's interesting to see that. I thought that what I could do for you is just give you a couple of examples of this literature so you can have that in back of your mind as we read the Proverbs today and tomorrow. I've chosen a couple of selections from Egyptian wisdom literature, actually. That seems to be the closest body of literature. Now, this isn't to say that Proverbs, you know, stole just directly, but that there was some larger context here. And the first example we're going to look at is the, I'll write on the board here, it's the instruction of King Mary-Carré. Now, he was an Egyptian king that lived someplace between 22,000 to 2000 BC. He lived during the transitional period from the Old Kingdom to the Middle Kingdom, a time of anarchy. And he was writing for his son, to instruct his son how to be a good king. So you have all of his accumulated experience being passed on to his offspring. And he says such things as, you know, make sure you guard the borders here because there's going to be this invasion. And don't allow traitors to live because they'll give you all kinds of trouble. And make sure you bring the right offerings and so forth so that you're in good standing with the God and so forth. So he gives very practical wisdom for his son. But I thought that I'd read a very short selection here because he also talks about justice, and that's one of the main subjects of Proverbs also, justice and concern for the weaker members of society. So I'll read this. This is a very short selection from the instruction of King Mary-Carré to his son. It says, "Do justice so long as thou abidest on earth. Calm the weeper and oppress not the widow." This is a little old-fashioned English, so it's hard to... "Calm the weeper and oppress not the widow. Do not oust a man from the property of his father. Do not harm officials in respect of their posts. Beware of punishing wrongfully. Do not kill. It shall not profit thee. Punish with caution by beatings, so this country shall be peaceful, and the rebel's plans shall be discovered. For God knows the treacherous of heart, and God requiteth his sins in blood. It's the mild man who succeeds for a lifetime. Do not slay a man whose good qualities thou knowest, one with whom thou didst chant the sacred writings. God will lead thee bold of step in difficult places. The soul cometh to the place it knoweth. It cannot stray from the paths of yesterday, and no magic can oppose it. It cometh to those that give it water. Okay, so kind of a list of admonitions, and some of them, as we read some of the chapters of Proverbs, will seem similar, familiar. But for some really close parallels, we have to look at another later work, and this is the teachings of a certain official, Amenemope. It's kind of a tongue twister, try it. Amenemope. Anyway, he lived around 1300 or so BC. And there's no evidence that he was a king, but he's giving advice to his son about how to behave in the royal court. So once again, we have the context for this wisdom literature being the court, the high places, the educated, the up-and-coming people. And I thought I'd read three different sections. If you were to read the whole thing, you'd find many parallels, especially to a certain part in the Proverbs. There's a section in the Proverbs that is very similar in its kind of advice, and that's Proverbs 22. Let's see, what is it exactly? 22:17, 24:22. It seems to be a little subdivision, a little book within Proverbs. And it deals more than the other sections with this kind of advice for somebody who's up and coming in the royal context of the royal courts. So I'm just going to read a couple of examples here just to give you an idea of the similarities. Let me find Proverbs also, so there's not big silence as there is now. Okay. So, this is the introduction here. The beginning of instruction on how to live, guidance for well-being, every direction for consorting with elders, rules for a courtier. So there's that court setting. Ability to refute him who uttereth an accusation, and to bring back a report to one who has sent him, to direct him to the path of life, to make him prosper upon the earth, to let his heart go into its shrine, steering him clear of evil, to save him from the mouth of strangers, and make him praised in the mouth of men. Mm-hmm. And this this teaching then consists of 30 chapters. Now, it's interesting, when you look at this opening here to this section here in Proverbs, you have something different, but you have incline your ear. Well, why didn't somebody else read this? 22:17 through 21. This is the introduction to this section.
Incline your ear and hear the words of the wise ones, that you may apply your very heart to my knowledge. For it is pleasant that you should keep them in your belly, that they may be firmly established together upon your lips. I better stop and say I'm reading from the New World Translation.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. For your confidence to come to be in, for your confidence to come to be in Jehovah Himself, I have given you knowledge today, even you. Have I not written you heretofore with counseling and knowledge, to show you the truthfulness of true sayings, so as to return sayings that are the truth, mm-hmm, to the one sending you forth?
Okay, good. So here we have the emphasis on answering correctly. Also, does anybody have a different translation in verse 20?
Have I not written 30 sayings to you?
30 sayings to you, yeah. That word there has never been understood for centuries. Yours in 20, what did yours say?
In 20?
Mm-hmm.
Which word? Have I not written you heretofore with counselings and knowledge?
The word shilsheth, it's a word in Hebrew, and nobody knew how to translate it for centuries.
Oh.
Because, and they translated it as excellent things and so forth. They didn't know really what to do with it. But now that this has been discovered, it has 30 chapters that are numbered and so forth, it seems to be kind of they're following the same order. I don't know, 30, I guess. Yeah. Good number of sayings or something. But here we have 30 sayings. So even the number of the chapters is the same, interestingly enough. Okay, now I'm going to skip over and read you a short section, and then we'll read a little parallel. This is in the second chapter, these sayings of Amen and Mope. And it says, guard thyself against robbing the wretched and against being strong with the man with a broken arm. Stretch not that forth thy hand to repel an old man, nor anticipate the aged. Let not thyself be sent on a wicked mission, nor love him who hath performed it. Cry not out against him whom thou hast injured, nor answer him back to justify thyself. Actually, the part that's most interesting is guard thyself against robbing the wretched and so forth. And look in Proverbs 22:22. That's mm-hmm. the first one. Would somebody read that? 22 and 23.
Do not rob the poor because he is poor, or crush the afflicted at the gate. For the Lord will plead their cause and despoil of life those who despoil them.
Mm-hmm. So you have that same concern with not oppressing the poor here, or the weak. And in the Proverbs there, then it's associated with God's protection of these people. So there's both similarity and contrast, we'd see if we look at every point. Similarity and contrast. It's part of a larger cultural scene, and yet it's the wisdom's been appropriated and made Israelite. It's been connected to the God of Israel. So let me look at another one here. This is the sixth chapter, and we're going to contrast and compare, if you want to look ahead, Proverbs 23:10. And I also have 22:28, but... 22:28. Mm-hmm. Proverbs 23:10 and 22:28. This is the sixth chapter here. Remove not the landmark at the boundaries of the arable land, nor disturb the position of the measuring cord. Covet not a cubit of land, nor throw down the boundaries of a widow. Beware of throwing down the boundaries of the fields, lest a terror carry thee off. Better is poverty in the hand of the God than riches in a storehouse. Better is bread when the heart is happy than riches with vexation. Did somebody find 23:10 there?
Do not remove an ancient landmark or enter the fields of the fatherless.
Mm-hmm, good. And
that's RSV.
RSV, thank you. And also 22:28 has the same, remove not the ancient landmark which your fathers have set. So concern for the property rights of the poor also, those who can't defend their property rights is in both of those. And also, as we read different chapters, we're going to find this... this form, better is poverty in the hand of God than riches in a storehouse. This kind of contrast you'll see throughout Proverbs. Better is this than this. Sometimes surprising contrast. Better is bread when the heart is happy than riches with vexation. We'll see that too. Okay, one final last one. This is in the 23rd chapter of these instructions of Amen and Mope. And we're going to contrast that with Proverbs 23:1-3. Now this one is the most explicit one, or one of the most explicit ones, where it's talking about how to behave in the presence of nobility, and especially how to behave at a dinner party when you're at a banquet. And these instructions say, eat not bread in the presence of a noble, nor apply thy mouth at the beginning. If you're satisfied, false chewings be a diversion for thy saliva. Look at the cup which is in the presence, and let it serve thy needs. So basically it's saying, when you go to dinner, an important banquet, don't be a glutton, don't keep eating and use all your saliva to eat the food. You know, just drink a little bit and you'll be much better off here. So kind of good advice here. Don't make a fool of yourself being a glutton. And now let's look at Proverbs 23:1-3.
When thou sittest to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is before thee, and put a knife to thy throat. If thou be a man given to appetite, be not desirous of his dangers, for they are deceitful meat. King James.
Okay, great. So put a knife to your throat. If you're going to be a glutton, stop yourself. Use the knife not to cut your food, but stop yourself. Don't make a fool of yourself. So we see in this section here, and if you were to read it more concerned with this kind of courtly context and a lot of similarities. Okay, well, this is to suggest that there was this larger cross-cultural borrowing Yes.
Mm-hmm. What is the literature that you're reading from?
This is, I'm reading from Egyptian wisdom literature, which is set in the court. And the one that I was reading from right there was the teaching, they call it the teaching or instruction of Amenemope, and about from the 13th century BC. And it's in this, these are just selections. It's in this book called Documents from Old Testament Times, edited by Winston Thomas, that's in the library. There's a fuller version of it in a larger book called Ancient Near Eastern Texts Relating to the Old Testament. So the full text is in that, and that's more useful if you want to make a fuller comparison. But this is just to point to that there was a larger context. Now, when we come to the Proverbs, we find a lot of some similarities, and I suppose every culture loves to put years of knowledge and wisdom in a single line, similar to our sound bites of today, you know, if you had to make a comparison. And it is made Israelite in that the wisdom which is contained in Proverbs is summarized as fear or respect of the Lord. So it's associated with the God of Israel. And also, I would claim that although you do have evidence of this kind of court setting in this section, for the most part, the wisdom that's in Proverbs is a very common person's wisdom. It doesn't have to do necessarily with the courts themselves, but rather a son being instructed by a father for the most part. We have in Proverbs, most people say, okay, Solomon wrote the book of Proverbs, and Solomon is associated with wisdom in the Old Testament. And the whole thing is prefaced by the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. But actually, it's not one book. It's the number of books that are collected together. The first one you have begins in chapter 1. It goes to chapter 9. And this is considered to be the latest, the most recent section. And it serves as an introduction to the other parts. And we're going to look at this a little more closely tomorrow. It has some speculation about God's wisdom being present in all of creation. So it makes more broad theological claims about God's wisdom and how it acts in all creation. The second section begins with chapter 10. If you turn to chapter 10, you'll see another opening, another heading, the Proverbs of Solomon. And that goes on for quite a way. Now, these are the ones we're going to look at today, this section and another later section, because they contain those short aphorisms, those little sayings that sum up, you know, a whole world of experience in a single line. And we're going to look at those. And that goes on to 22:16. These are perhaps some of the oldest material in Proverbs, and perhaps even in the Hebrew Bible. It seems to be material that's been handed down for generations. Then the third section is that little section we already looked at. The fourth begins then in 25. Yes, look at 25. The opening of 25. And what do you find at the heading there? Somebody read that. 25:1.
Also are the Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied.
Okay. So interesting, you have the Proverbs of Solomon, but they're being copied by the men of Hezekiah. Hezekiah lived in the 8th century, Solomon in the 10th century, so a couple of centuries later. And that goes on down to 29. But it's interesting that there are also other Proverbs, too. If you look at toward the very end of the book of Proverbs, you see a number of additions here. For example, look at 30. Here you have the words of Agur, son of Yaki, of Masa. So you have other collections, too, besides ones that are attributed to Solomon. And then also you have, in 31, the words of Lemuel, king of Masa, which his mother taught him. You have a mother teaching. So you do have other collections here too. So the book of Proverbs is a collection. And For the most part, Proverbs became associated with Solomon because he was considered the wisest of all kings. If you look at 1 Kings 4, 32 through 33, we have a description of his wisdom and his association with Proverbs. Although his wisdom there seems to be more associated with his knowledge of the natural world. So 1 Kings 4, actually you can read from 29 to the end of the chapter. 1 Kings 4, 29 to 34.
And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure and largeness of mind like the sand on the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt.
Oh, the wisdom of Egypt. Interesting.
For he was wiser than all other men, wiser than Ethan the Ezrahite, and Heman, Calcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahol. And his fame was in all the nations round about. He also uttered 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. He spoke of trees, from the cedar that is in Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the wall. He spoke also of beasts and of birds and of reptiles and of fish. And men came from all peoples to hear the wisdom of Solomon and from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom.
Okay, thanks. So wise Solomon is associated with all these proverbs, which are most likely proverbs or sayings that have been circulating, you know, before that too, but are collected here in these sections here. You know, Solomon in, yeah.
What was the reference? It was 1 Kings 4.
That was 1 Kings 4, 29 through 34. It speaks of Solomon's wisdom. Okay. And 3,000 proverbs. I don't know if that's like the 30, I don't know. It's interesting though that he speaks 3,000. Is that number again? Let's see. Oh yes, I wanted to tell you this interesting rabbinic tradition that Solomon wrote, you know, three books. Actually, you know, that's also in our tradition: Song of Songs, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes. But in the Jewish tradition, they explain that he wrote these three books at three different times in his life, when he was young and vigorous, and you know the story of all his concubines and wives and everything. He wrote Song of Songs, which is erotic love poetry, right? So he wrote that when he was young. Then he wrote Proverbs when he became older, more mature, and was thinking of, you know, success and work and so forth. And then finally, when he was an old man, he wrote Ecclesiastes, which is despairing of all that he's done in his life. So there's a nice correlation in the rabbinic tradition with different parts of Solomon's life. But anyway, he became the figure with which all these traditions were associated. And what we're going to do now at this point, we're going to look at sections within these two books, within the book of Proverbs. And we're going to try to discover certain things about them, about the nature of Proverbs and who wrote them and what the underlying philosophy is and so forth. So what I'm going to do is we're going to divide into groups and take a different chapter, and then as you're reading, keep these questions in mind. Who wrote these proverbs? Well, they are ascribed to Solomon, and some people like to think that they're written by Solomon. Myself, I think that they're traditional wisdom that are later ascribed to the figure of Solomon, as you know, the kind of the saying something is by Solomon is saying that it's in this category of literature of wisdom. Just as saying that something's by Moses is saying, well, this is in the legal tradition. So it's kind of a way of categorizing the literature. But if you look at it, who wrote these proverbs? Do you think men or women wrote them? Do you think that they were the wealthy or the poor? Were they people who were very conventional, or were they radicals? And then what's the philosophy of life which lies behind these proverbs? They're going to be short little sound bites, you know, as we know them. But is there something which you can draw from them? What's the kind of underlying themes that you see with them? And then find within your chapter, if you can, a famous proverb. See if you recognize proverbs in there. Choose out something that you think is meaningful. Often humor is used in the proverbs, so if you find a funny one, share that. Then if you find something that you think is a little outdated, or you know, something that doesn't quite fit with our wisdom of today. And then think about Proverbs today, something maybe that you've heard when you were growing up, or something that you like to say in different contexts of your life. Because this kind of summarization of life experiences in a single line certainly didn't end with the Proverbs. So why don't we take groups of about four? That seemed to work out really well before. So let's see. Why don't you four here take 10, verse 10, okay?
And chapters.
Oh, I'm sorry. Chapters. Yeah, we're dealing with chapters, whole chapters. And so you can all turn your chairs around and make a little circle. It's going to sound like a hive here. But why don't you four take chapter 12? I'm gonna skip chapters just so that there's some different material here. And would you four like to take 15, if you would? And maybe you four here take 16. And you four back there, take 18. Now let's skip and let's go to 25 right here. And then let's have 26 right here. And do you guys up there want to do one? You can do like 27. So we'll take about 10 minutes or so. Okay, we'll start over here and we'll just go group by group and then we'll come back around for the next question and we'll go like that. So we'll start with the question. Who wrote these proverbs? What did you find out? And also, you know, when you're giving your answer, you might want to, especially when we get down to quoting them, please give us the chapter and the verse so that other people who aren't in your group can find them. So what did you find out when you were reading these proverbs? Who do you think, how would you characterize the person or persons who wrote these?
What chapter are we in now?
We're in 26. We decided that, actually, that it was indicated at the beginning of chapter 25. These proverbs are of Solomon.
Okay, so you go with the traditional description.
Yeah.
So then how would you describe Solomon then?
A man.
Okay. Could you get that from, well okay. Okay, he's a man. Okay, we'll go on the next group. What did you decide? Who wrote these?
We had chapter 25.
Uh-huh.
We decided it was someone in the court who wasn't as high as the king, but they were kind of in the middle somewhere. They were higher than the princes, but not as high as the king.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, when you have that, the court context is emphasized with these
superstitions. It's also clear that it was written by men because chapter 25, verse 24. It's better to live in a corner of the housetop than in a house shared with a contentious woman.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. If you could look at the contents as well as the attribution, you know, that those little phrases, and tell what you find about the proverbs themselves. You know, maybe okay. If Solomon wrote them all, fine. But describe the kind of social context or whatever. Okay, so by mail. Okay, anyone over here from the next group? Who wrote these?
Well, our first response was, what was it? Men with beards.
Men with beards. How'd you get the beards?
That was your line.
Old guys, huh?
And for a while we thought lawyers, but then we decided that this chapter focused much more on listening to other people and not sort of stepping in with your wisdom first, but gaining wisdom from others around you. So we decided it probably wasn't written by lawyers.
Oh. At least not lawyers in our time, right? Actually, you know, it's interesting, but if we'd had more time to read these documents, one of the big themes is the silence of the wise man. It's you know, and keeping your tongue and knowing when to use your tongue and when to not use it. So discretion with speech is one of the big themes.
And that was really big in this chapter. Mm-hmm. And there is one line here about he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. So slight speculation, could have been written by a woman, but made more likely by a man who's happily married.
Mm-hmm. One place, yeah. Oh, what did you guys find?
We agree with the first group, written by a man. But, and every man, it doesn't seem to be especially high or low.
So a male perspective, okay. Next group.
The artist is the same, Solomon.
Okay.
From a man's perspective.
Ours is chapter 15. I guess we decided it was a man. Perhaps a lot of advice to a son had been.
So an older, yeah. An older person. Okay, the words of an older person.
Not necessarily in the court, in this particularly.
Right.
Didn't come through strongly.
Right, I think even despite the these short, brief introductions saying that they belong to, that they're Solomon's words, which place them in the court. If you actually read the content of the material, it doesn't really have much to do with the court in most cases. It seems to be a very family-oriented kind of wisdom. Let me see, did anybody come up with anything different here?
No, but listening to what people have said about Solomon and the attribution of all these to Solomon, I personally don't think he was very wise.
I don't think there's much wisdom in here.
This sounded, if anyone here knows anything about Benjamin Franklin, in his autobiography, this sounds like the elder Franklin writing as though you were a young man, admonishing youths and sons and others to live the straight life, walk the narrow path, which he hadn't done himself. There was in our group a suggestion that there's a good deal of cynicism about this, but maybe I should.
Well, we thought possibly this is a really mature person at the end of the line, just about ready to say goodbye to the earth and the Lord of the Lord or whatever, and talking to a brash youngster who's just going to make it on his own, who really doesn't take seriously a lot of stuff Grandpa is saying here. But the whole thing finally said, hey, at the end, there's mortality and immortality, and you're going to either live or die. So there was a lot of stuff that the youngster would probably say, oh, come on now.
Okay, thanks.
Which chapter was that?
12.
And did your group have any observations you want to share?
Well, it was about, we feel it was a wise person, and also probably someone that had, you explained it, what you had mentioned.
Well, I just happened to fall on the verse in chapter 11, which makes me think that it must have been a rich man. As a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman, which is without discretion. Only rich man would come up with that metaphor.
Did everybody hear that one? Read it again.
As a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion.
So as a ring of gold in a pig is a woman with a beautiful woman without discretion. Okay, well, I think that falls in the category of humor too. But also. What do you think? Do you think that the person who writes this is wealthy or poor? What's your impression? Do you have any?
Had
to be wealthy. Why do you say that?
Because only the wealthy, well-placed, would be educated in the first place. And secondly, wouldn't get the attention of any publishing authorities if...
Nobody would have copied it.
You know, there's
publish
a lot,
or perish.
Publish or perish. There's a lot of advice too about how to be successful. It's kind of achievement oriented.
There's something that can say a word on behalf of the people who didn't make it. You know, like the farmer. We may lose our farm, but we're always going to have something to eat. That came in too, so it could be someone who finally says it's not worth it all because I did lose it.
Do you see that in some of the ones that you had? Do you have one an example?
There was one. Soil. He who works his land will have abundant food, but he who chases fantasies lacks judgment. So we may not have anything, we're not chasing fantasy, but we're eating, you know.
Going along with that theme, there are several references in chapter 16 to, like this one, it's better to be a bully spirit with the poor than to divide the spoil with the proud. So maybe he's said, forget riches and ascetic or something.
Yeah, it seems to me that there's a lot of them that speak about how to do well, how to succeed, and and also how to deal with the poor. There's a few, I don't know if anybody had these, but you know, it's best to give your wealth to the poor than to hoard it and so forth. So it seems to be a wealthy class, but on the other hand, you do have these that say that it's better to be poor, you know, than to be rich. And,
yeah. Ours, chapter 18, was quite full of sort of relationship sorts of things, talking about brothers and caring for each other, and that's better than... it's important to be with a brother. And then another one that said, let's see, there are friends who pretend to be friends, but there's a friend who sticks closer than a brother. It was full of that kind of thing. It was very little about wealth or power.
Okay, good point. Thanks. So, good. So this group doesn't think that it's necessarily the upper class. The earlier group said, yeah, it had to be upper class, folks and so forth. We read different chapters also, though. Earlier on, so what about overriding philosophy? What do you think the philosophy of this author was? We know we have to running out of time, but we'll take another 10 minutes. So.
Verse 28, I guess that's the last verse in chapter 12 kind of summed everything up, when it said, "In the path of righteousness is life, but the way of error leads to death." Okay, everything seemed to.
So there's two paths.
We have the same thing in verse 10, where in verse 32 of 10, the lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked what is perverse. So that ties in with that chapter. So the philosophy is righteousness, I mean the idea of righteousness and not wickedness, that sort of thing.
So there's the contrast. Back here, what were your decisions about the philosophy or the overarching themes?
Well, I haven't been hearing everything that's been said. That's my fault. But we were interested in that we had sort of chapter 15 divided into a couple of different parts in which we saw such a thing as a gentle tongue is a tree of life, and perverseness, and it breaks the spirit, and it moves over to better like a dinner of herbs where love is and a fatted ox with hatred. So we're seeing a division within it, and then coming to he who ignores instruction despises himself, but he who heeds admonition gains understanding. As if I'd put it thinking about three sections within that chapter.
That's even more appropriate now with the trend away from prime beef.
I have a theory here that... Cut the tape. I have a theory here that they cook beef to encourage people not to eat it. The way they cook beef encourages people not to eat it. But anyway, yeah, they may have that trend. Okay, so...
We have no answer.
You have no answer? Okay. Any other answers here about the philosophy?
That was God who guides us. Chapter 16 is a lot about God's guidance.
That's very true. So although it's this traditional kind of folksy wisdom passed on, there's the introduction of God's presence too. Okay, back over here. Philosophy. Well, you did the brother, is that?
Well, it was a openness to learning, the value of words, and that our speech, those things that come out of our mouth, are reflective of who we are, whether we're fool or wise.
Okay, great.
And you think before we speak.
The importance of speech again. And over here?
Again, a prudence in speech and in deed, sort of in the other major theme in our chapter was, since it's clearly a sort of courtier's perspective, is knowing your place at court and not getting above your station.
Okay. The earlier section made more of, and maybe it was because we looked at different chapters too. I tried to spread them out and give different chapters this time to have a different perspective. But they thought it was more success oriented, you know, kind of choose this way, not this way. And they thought it was sort of achievement oriented. So what I was going to say was that it's not the whole story in the biblical story, because you have the Exodus and God's advocacy of the poor and so forth. But you do have elements here within Proverbs, you know, the need to take care of the weaker members of society too. So it is part of general common sense or wisdom that's so important in our lives and directing our lives. So how about famous Proverbs? Did you find any famous Proverbs? No famous Proverbs in your section. Any here? You can read, tell us the chapter and verse.
Chapter 25, verse 21. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat, and if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. Mm-hmm. Just later, adopted in the gospel.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, there's another good example of a very kindly attitude toward the have-nots. Over here, you find a famous one? No famous ones in yours? Okay.
1618.
Pride goeth before a fall. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that, read that whole thing.
Well, the whole thing, pride goeth before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall.
Uh-huh. Yeah, seems like we have our paraphrases in English, too. Did you find any famous ones up there?
No.
No famous ones? Any over here? Any other famous ones? Yeah.
27 and chapter 10. The fear of the Lord prolongs life, but the years of the wicked will be short. That's a really famous one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other famous ones here?
We have a famous one, 15:1. Yeah. A soft answer turns away wrath, right? Mm-hmm. And a harsh word stirs up anger.
Okay, good. Yeah. Any other famous ones?
10:4.
10:4.
A slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich.
Uh-huh. Okay, there's a sort of optimistic, success-oriented one there. And, you know, you probably all know others, too, that aren't from these chapters, like in 28:1, the wicked flee when no one pursues. And, you know, that famous one about spare the rod and spoil the child. That's in there, too. So it seems like we've chosen certain ones and made them part of our world here.
I wish there were. This one were famous that you had earlier in 22.
Mm-hmm.
Do not exploit the poor because they are poor, and do not crush the needy in court. You know, as if legally they have an excuse not to care for them.
Yeah.
Maybe we could start one.
Yeah, let's have a trend. Proverb revival time. Okay, so now what about meaningful? That sounds like a meaningful one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, one that you'd like to popularize again. Any others that people found? Yeah.
26:17. He who meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a passing dog by the ears.
I like that one. Yeah. Those two, right? Any other ones that struck you as fresh and full of meaning? Yes.
16:1 is the plans of the mind belong to man, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord, which is very similar to man proposes what God disposes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that from Proverbs? You know?
Yeah, I think that's probably derived from that from that chapter, from that verse or similar ones.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Chapter 10:17. He who heeds instruction is on the path to life, but he who rejects reproof goes astray. And then 19, when words are many, transgression is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is prudent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank
you. There's one something like that in the 12th chapter. A prudent man conceals his knowledge, but fools proclaim their folly.
Yeah. Fools proclaim their folly. What is that? Better to be silent and thought a fool than to speak and remove all doubt?
Yeah.
That's in the modern version. Any other ones that people want to share before? What about funny proverbs? Anybody find funny proverbs?
We have two.
Uh-huh.
The one is, if a man loudly blesses his neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. And the next one is, is, a quarrelsome wife is like a constant drip on a rainy day. Restraining her is like restraining the wind or grasping oil with the hand.
Funny. Okay.